We're broadcasting for Radio Sydney, an Australian broadcasting media. I'm Rupert Guinness, and we're going to be calling in to Aaron, who's over at the US of A, to help me co-host this week's episode. It's a chock-full episode. We've got plenty happening. As we're broadcasting now in sunny and humid Sydney, we've got a massive weekend of footy finals. We've had the AFL final between the West Coast Eagles and Hawthorn. The Mighty Hawks got up to continue their dynasty in the final at the MCG. And just before we were broadcasting, I've woken up to watch the Rugby World Cup over in England, where the Mighty Wallabies beat England to shore up a place in the quarterfinals. But first off, they've got to play Wales next week, who will also go to the quarterfinals in Twickenham. But it's a great win by the Wallabies there. And after we're broadcasting, there's the NRL National Rugby League Grand Final, a cool Queensland affair between the Broncos and the Cowboys. So it's there's plenty happening here in Australia and around the world. But what a ride is the show about swim, bike and run and anything else that tickles your fancy in the wild and wacky world of sport. And there is plenty of things happening. Rest assured, we're going to speak with Aaron to start off with some big news about the Ironman. The Hawaii Ironman is going to be held next week in Kona. Melissa Hellschelt, as Aaron broke the news yesterday, is unable to take the start in the race due to injury. So Aaron's going to be talking to us about that. We're also going to be continuing the story about Jarryd Hayne, the former NRL player who's with the San Francisco 49ers in the NFL. He's up and running now. He's had three games into the season. And we are obviously not going to speak to Jarryd Hayne, unfortunately, but we do have someone who's spoken to him. And that's Michael Chamas, my colleague at the Sydney Morning Herald, who spent a month leading up to Hayne's first game for the 49ers, reporting on the story. We're going to speak to Michael about what was it like being an Aussie journo following this big story in American sport. Also about Jarryd Hayne, and also about how he conducted himself, how he feels, his future, and the pursuit of the next Jarryd Hayne or Jarryd Haynes. Will that come from rugby league, or will it come from rugby union, or will it come at all? Anyway, there's plenty in the show this week. So let's get the ball running, let's get the bike riding, the swimming, and the run running by getting in with Aaron Lee on the phone. So let's just take a break first, and we'll put the call in, and we'll get going with this great show. What a ride.
Mama! Welcome back to What a Ride, and I'm Rupert Guinness, and as promised, we've got Aaron S. Lee on the line direct from New Orleans. And Aaron, as I said before, he's the guy who broke the big story, the Iron Man story, about Melissa Hauselse and her disappointing decision that she's had to pull out of the Iron Man coming up. Aaron, welcome back to What a Ride. We're missing you here in sunny Sydney in Australia, but congratulations on a great story, but obviously it wasn't a happy story for Melissa. Just tell us briefly, give us a recap of the story and how you got the story.
Oh, absolutely, Rube. Thanks for having me back on. You know, obviously, Melissa was extremely devastated. It's the second year in a row that she's now forced to withdraw out of Kona due to both kind of freakish injuries. This year, she found out maybe about 5 weeks before competing at the Ironman Asia Pacific Championships in Melbourne back in March, that she had a little bout of pneumonia. And she had some struggles with coughing over those few weeks prior to the race. And unbeknownst to her, she actually cracked a rib. She cracked a rib while in one of these coughing fits, so to speak. And it obviously affected her quite a lot during the race and in the train leading up to the race. Of course, it was well documented that she struggled with some feet and blister problems throughout the race as well. But she braved through, not only completed her second Ironman, full distance Ironman race, but she won her second, so she's 2 for 2 at that distance. After which, though, she kind of fell off the radar for about 6 months, and she was suffering and struggling a little bit, and trying to regain some feeling in the feet from such a hard race. Again, she almost actually pulled out of Melbourne at the time, but she braved through it. She won the race, took some time off, and did a lot of training on the elliptical trainer while still doing the lap swimming and obviously riding a bike. Over that course, she believed that her bone density dropped. And about 6-8 weeks ago, she decided to start picking up the schedule again in her training routine because she was preparing to go to Kona. And to be quite honest, she didn't know until Tuesday, she suffered a stress fracture of her sacrum, which is obviously in the pelvis area. For those, you're probably well aware of your medical and human anatomy there, Ruth, probably more than I am. I had to actually look it up when she told me. But she found out through a scan, an MRI scan from her U.S. based in Boulder on Tuesday, and she has just been left absolutely devastated. She's obviously a phenomenal triathlete. And she's only been a pro for about 5 years. To give people a little bit of background on Mel, she was Melissa Rollison, who competed for Australia at the Commonwealth Games in, I want to say 2006 in Melbourne, and she won the silver medal in the 3,000-meter steeplechase. Melissa's running career was shortened a bit by... she suffered stress fractures quite a bit in the shin as well. She turned to triathlon with the encouragement of her friend and now manager, Phil Stoneman, of M5 Management. Big shout out to Phil. She turned to triathlon, and her first full year went undefeated. She's gone on in that 5-year span to capture not one but two Ironman 70.3 World Championships. She won the 2013, I believe it was, ITU long distance triathlon, the world title there. And so she's a 3-time world champion, phenomenal athlete. So she's just absolutely been left devastated. And plus, I'm devastated because I chipped her. I chipped her to win Kona this year, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, like I was about to ask you. I mean, you wrote the story for First Off the Bike, and the Ironman competitors, particularly her rivals, would have read that, and they would have been surprised probably to hear that news. I mean, how do you think that's going to change the race now? Do you think, she would have been, you tipped her, as you said, to win this year, but do you think it'll change, besides taking out one favorite, will it change the strategy of the race?
Well, listen, she was my favorite. I think if you were to ask our friend Phil Rottner or some of the other triathlon journalists out there and industry insiders, she probably was more of a dark horse. I tipped her because, for obviously, Marinda Carfrae, Rennie, Australian as well. Mm-hmm. Three-time, reigning three-time Ironman world champion. She's never finished off the podium in six tries. She's amazing. But the thing with Rennie is, and she's shown this over the last few years, and her title defenses, that she's hard to, it's hard to outrun her. And yeah, even though she's not a super strong bike rider, she's shown that if you don't have more than a 14-minute lead, a gap on her on the run, heading into transition, out of transition two, she's going to run you down.
Well, we saw that last year, didn't we? We saw that last year, how strong is she? Yeah.
Absolutely. But if there's one person in the pro field that I feel she could not run down necessarily with that kind of gap, it's Melissa Hauschild. So again, we're going back to her three, you know, she's an amazing runner, started her whole career off against silver medalist, 3,000 meter steeplechase. She's progressively gone to the long distance, and she's done an amazing time. As a matter of fact, finished some of the best splits, I think the fifth best bike split, I believe, as well, for a female at the Melbourne race last year, or just earlier this year when she won the Asia Pacific Championships to earn an automatic regional qualification for Kona. So I think that, to me, Mel was that perfect athlete suited to really give Rennie that challenge that she's, and of course, first off, the bike tweeted the story last night as it broke, and Rennie immediately got on there and expressed her condolences as well. I think she's a bit bummed. I think she was looking forward to a little bit of that challenge as well. But it does leave the door open for Rennie to obviously, you know, go to, you know, compete for a fourth title.
Yeah.
But you know, there are a lot of great athletes out there. Liz Blatchford, Angela Nay. I mean, there's a lot of Mary Beth Ellis. I mean, the list goes on. There's a lot of good female athletes out there that will be vying for that title. But, you know, until someone can outrace Merinda Carfrae, she's got to be an odds-on favorite.
I think the amazing thing about Merinda Carfrae is not just her speed, you know, in the back end of the marathon. It's just her confidence in her stride. I remember watching her last year, and she didn't look flustered at all. She just had that sort of self-assuredness when she was running, even though she had to come back from so far, that she knew what she had to do, and keeping calm. Yeah, eliminate so much sort of the stresses on you. I mean, you save energy by staying calm, you know, mentally and everything. And
absolutely,
she and her fluid running style is just beautiful to watch.
It just makes you wonder, though, Ruth, because she does give a lot of time away on the bike, and to be honest, she rides a felt IA time trial bike or a triathlon bike that was literally designed for Merinda Carfrae in mind. It was basically the year that I think 2013 where she failed to repeat and capture her title. They went to the drawing board because they realized that she struggles a bit on the bike. Rennie, and I'm going to get the figures wrong, but she's only about 5 foot two. That's 165 centimeters. She's only a couple stones. So she's a tiny little thing. And so she's not producing a lot of power on the bike. So they designed a bike that would keep her within that 14 minute range. They felt that if they could keep her within 14 minutes coming out of T2, transition two, following the bike leg, that she has the speed to run and the talent and the skills and the athletic ability to run her competitors down. Again, like you said, she's done that 2 years in a row now. My feeling was she could not suffer that kind of time loss to someone like Melissa Hauschild.
Yeah.
And that's where I was so intrigued about this. Again, Melissa is completely devastated. To go back to last year, and I remember she had a freak accident, which started, it's been a rough 12 to 14 months for her. She suffered a pectoral muscle tear during a massage, the sports masseuse. It was not her traditional sports masseur.
Yeah.
And he accidentally slipped while massaging her pectoral muscles, and his elbow grinded in and really ripped the pectoral muscle from the body, from the bone.
Gosh, that's
I was literally I Yeah, and this was only about 3 days from her defending her 70.3 world title.
Yeah.
And I was literally on the phone with her as she was going to that table. As you know, Rube, how often have we, when we're not there, sometimes when we are there in person with the athletes, how many times have we interviewed athletes while they're on the massage table?
Yeah.
And it's a good time for them to take interviews. And I was literally on the phone. She was in the U.S., and I was, of course, in Sydney at the time. And I was on the phone with her just prior to that happening.
Yeah.
Now, she would go on to race 3 days later, but she had to pull out following the swim because she was in excruciating pain. And, of course, what was to be her Kona debut was obviously sidelined, postponed to this year. And, again, yet another freak accident. Now, the good news is they did catch this in the MRI on Tuesday, the fracture in the sacrum. And the good news is that if they hadn't have caught it, she could have easily done a lot of long-term damage that would have potentially been career-ending.
Yeah, well,
so
I think
if there's a good news, if there's a good lining in that, it's bad. And she said to me, while she is devastated, she's hungry and probably hungrier than ever to go back to Kona. She wasn't going to go to Kona this year. She told me on Thursday, she said, look, I just want to go back to Australia. I don't want to go to Kona. I don't want to sit on the sidelines as a spectator again. But over the next couple of days, she thought it over. She said, no, I'm going to go. I'm going to, you know, take part in the event and be there and come back even more motivated than ever. She wanted to go this year to win. She said, I was there to win. I wasn't there to get a result. And that's the thing. She wants to win.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, it's still going to be great. Looking forward to the race next week. And obviously we're going to have the men's race as well, which is always a cracker. I think, you know, it's great that we can actually see the Ironman live these days now too. So it'll be about this time next week, Australian time, when it'll all be unfolding. Hey, listen, Aaron, while you're there,
by the way, Rip, are you going to – I did not see your name on the elite start list. Is that something – have you decided to pull out?
Look, I've different muscle injuries, mate. Different muscle injuries. I didn't qualify, put it that way.
Oh, fantastic. I tell you what, well, one thing, obviously, Sebastian Kinlay and Frederick Van Leerd and those guys, Andy Potts, they'll be racing for the men vying for that top spot. But always keep an eye out for the Australian Luke McKenzie.
Yeah. Well, hopefully he can produce a good one for Australia. Listen, Aaron, if you can just stay on the line, we've still got lots more to talk about. We're going to talk about some bikes, but I just thought we'll just take a break first and then we'll come back after a nice selection of music.
Ooh, watching me, hanging by a string this time. Don't easily, climax on the perfect line. There's lessons to be learned.
Guinness, and with me on the line still, direct from New Orleans in the US of A, is Aaron S. Lee. Hey, we're talking before the break about triathlon, the Ironman in Hawaii in Kona, which is coming up this week, but also in the US, we've had the World Cycling Championships and a terrific win in the men's road race by Peter Sagan. He absolutely was the strongest rider in the field and probably one of the most popular champions I can recall afterwards having won the race in the rainbow jersey. But from an Australian point of view, it was an interesting result. Michael Matthews got the silver medal. He won the bunch sprint for second place. Sixth place was his Orica Green Edge teammate, Simon Gerrans. Now, in the fallout of this, there was a bit of a debate as to whether Simon Gerrans should have helped Michael Matthews try and bridge the gap or to reel in Sagan or not. The team did stipulate that the Australian team, that is not Orica Green Edge, because they race for their countries at the World Championships, stipulated there were two leaders, Simon Gerrans and Michael Matthews. I spoke to Simon Gerrans, who said that was that was a discussion before the race and during it, and it was clear to everybody as to who had the protected status and who had to work for who. Nevertheless, there was still debate, and a lot of people still think that Gerrans should have still worked for Matthews in the finale there. It could have made a difference. But at the end of the day, it's one of those could have, would have, but didn't have stories. We've got to move on. But it's an interesting story. I don't know what you felt about it, Aaron, as to who should have done what.
Well, yeah, this story actually goes back in December, Roop. I remember, in the off season, Simon, he had a mountain biking accident and fractured his collarbone, I believe. And I remember talking to Matty White about it, and I said, "Look, how does this affect his season? What does this do?" Obviously, another bridesmaid year, so to speak, for the Australians come up. Second, obviously, Gerrans came up second last year and in Ponferrada and Spain. And you just kind of, your heart goes out to him because the Australians are so close to get that world title again. Obviously, Cadell did it. What route was that, 2009?
Yeah, 2009, yeah.
So looking for another world title. But this year, it was kind of thought leading into the race, at least that was my understanding. You may have a different one, that this might be Matthew's year. And one of the reasons being for that was the course obviously suited both riders. This year's course in Richmond, it did suit both riders. But the initial stance was that obviously Simon Gerrans was going to have a heavy January with the, combined for the Australian men's title and also the Tour Down Under. Well, that all went awry when Simon crashed and wrecked and broke his collarbone. So it meant that his season was going to start later, which meant he would be in better form towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to Matty White while Simon Gerrans was in the operating room. And basically, Matty saying, "Look, when it comes down to the race, again, it's country, and it's Oregon Green Edge is racing for your country. It'll just come down to who's the stronger rider."
Yeah.
And I think that's what it did. I think Michael Matthews he's shown me a lot over the last 2 years. I really like the guy. I like his riding style. He's a bit different. He's a different cat. But I kind of dig that, and I think it would have been nice if they could have somehow worked together and helped either one, help the other out to take the world title, to take the rainbows. Oh, in an ideal situation, yes. But I think when you got the green light and you feel like you've got the legs, I mean, it'd be hard for me not to ride for myself for a world
championship. Well, look, this is my take on it, and I think there's just two points which I think are really important is that firstly, there were the tactics that were set aside by Brad McGee, the Australian team sports director and national selector, that both riders were given a carte blanche to ride for themselves. So that was outlined specifically. Secondly, I think you've got a case of, as you said, Michael Matthews, absolutely fantastic rider who's really shown a lot this year. and I think he's matured as well. And that Tour de France finished by him was really important because it's made him mentally tougher. And you've got a young guy. He's 25, young guy. You know, just getting better and better with every season. And you know, Simon Gerrans, who's probably closer to the end of his career than the start, and he's 35. But he's still obviously in very good form. But they're both natural born racers. You know, they race to win. They don't race to be satisfied with anything less. So you can understand you put them both in a race. They're both going to ride for themselves. Well, what I really think that, okay, benefit of hindsight, I think perhaps if you wanted a team, the full team from Australia of 9 riders to ride for one rider, that decision had to be made by Brad McGee before the race and outlined specifically, and even in with a view to selecting the team. You've got to select a team that's going to work for one rider, or you do what Brad McGee did, have two riders and perhaps have to put up with the consequences of thinking, gee, we might have won if we had have all worked for one instead of for two.
Well, can I ask you this, Rube? Let me ask you to put your Monday morning quarterback hat on, and that's obviously a phrase coined here in the United States based off the NFL. But would you have done it differently? Would you have maybe had a different strategy leading in to hopefully guarantee the Aussies a chance at the Rainbow?
I think, it's a hard call to say whether honestly or not, because it's hard to say. I mean, you'd be willing to back Gerrans and Matthews to have a crack at the win, wouldn't you? I mean, like it is with hindsight, isn't it? But maybe this is something I think, looking ahead to the future, that Cycling Australia need to address when we select our national team. I think in the future we should back one rider and have a B plan, but that second option is selected on the strict. Or on the instructions that they know that they're the backup plan and they're there to be, you know, the wingman for the number one rider. But in case if the number one rider is not up to it on the day, they get their crack. I just think it's got to be outlined more in that way. So I still think in future we need to ride for one and have an option, you know, as a backup, and the only in the proviso that if the A plan is not up to it on the day or has a mechanical, that person can take over.
Well, it's definitely a missed opportunity both years because they're probably not in the near future. Will there be two more perfectly, ideally suited courses for mm-hmm. two such capable, strong athletes? So it's a missed opportunity for Australia, and it might not come back the Aussies' way again for a few years. And I'd be looking maybe, and I'm just going to throw this out there, Rube. We could be looking maybe a future sprint stage for a sprinter, and it could be one Caleb Ewan.
Well, you know, next year we're in the championships next year are in Qatar and Doha, and that'll be set up.
Are you calling it that early for the young 21-year-old?
Nothing like pressure. Nothing like pressure, mate. Nothing like pressure.
Yeah.
Hey,
he's shown that he can handle it.
The interesting thing is that these guys, Matthews, Gerrans, and we did, you know, speak about Caleb Ewan, but they are riding for Orica Greenedge during the year, and it's one of the great stories, or big stories, I think, of from an Australian cycling point of view this year has been the transformation of Orica Greenedge from being an opportunistic team that goes for classics, that goes for trying to sneak into breaks, to being one that's evolving into a team for general classification. Their Colombian rider, Esteban Chavez, got a fantastic fifth place overall in the Vuelta when they were aiming for a top 10. We've seen the Yates brothers from Britain. Okay, these are not Australian riders, but they're in an Australian team with an Australian ethos and under the direction of Matt White, who's an Australian. And this team is evolving, and it's changing in its setup too, and it's changing with its roster as well. But it's evolving in a very positive way.
Well, I'll tell you, I believe whether Chavez or the Yates brothers are Australian or not, their success, the fans of Australian cycling, they're quickly embracing those guys as their own. And I think that's fantastic, and I love watching them. You know, talking about Orica Greenedge, what I'd like to talk to you about is just Simon Clark. Simon Clark is gone. He's a Cannondale Garmin, and he has made the move. And just what's your thoughts on that? You know, at this point in Simon's career, what do you think he'll receive at Cannondale Garmin, obviously maybe more pay, maybe a bigger role with the team. I just kind of wonder what his motivation was to leave.
Yeah, I think I wasn't stunned that he left, because I guess, you know, obviously we hear these things, you know, rumours and murmurs, you know, going, you know, through the season, and then there's this silly rule in Australia and in the UCI in cycling about, you know, no discussions about contracts until August 1. But you hear things beforehand. But yeah, I mean, saying that, someone like Simon Clark, who I've thought is, you know, he's a fantastic rider, and we've seen him produce some great rides. You know, he won the King of the Mountains in the Vuelta a few years ago, and he had a fantastic ride in a couple of world championships, and where, you know, the leaders have fallen out by the wayside because of crashes or whatever, and he's had to be the one to deliver the goods. And, you know, I still think he's got some great rides in him. And I think by going to where he's going to go to now, he's going to get that opportunity. Maybe at Orica Green Edge, things are getting kind of crowded with the, as I said, the transformation of the team into a general classification team, yet you've still got young guys like, you know, Caleb Ewan coming through who's a sprinter. You know, I just think there's too many people who probably justifiably have their own ambitions, but not enough opportunity within that team. So you have to go and search for it elsewhere. And I think he'll get that now.
Well, there's been a lot of movements with Cannondale Garmin, a lot of changes there with that team. And obviously we talked the other day about young Kiwi Patrick Bevan from the Avanti Racing team joining that team. One person that does leave is our friend Nathan Haas.
Yeah.
He leaves, the young Cameron, the 26-year-old. He's going to the MTN Quebeca team, which is now Team Dimension Data, I believe.
That's right.
Continental team. South Africa. So it'll be interesting to keep following Nathan as well. So definitely we'll stay tuned to how those guys pan out, for sure.
Yeah, look, I'm very happy for Nathan. I think he's going to fit into that South African team. You know, they're a colourful team, you know, with, you know, they bring a lot of pizzazz to the peloton. We remember at the Tour de France, and the Eritrean supporters were there as well. And, you know, they really were a great story, but not just a story from being different. There was certainly a story for the way they raced. You know, they're not short of ambition. They're willing to have a go, and they do produce results, you know. And and Nathan, I think, will be, you know, he's a guy with personality, and I think he'll be swept up by that atmosphere, you know, of the team, and he'll certainly get some opportunities himself. They're going to have Mark Cavendish there as well, so I guess Nathan will probably be on a different program, I'd say, racing wise, because I think the Cav program is going to be very much built around Cavendish, obviously, for the races he does. But the flip side of that, if Nathan does a different program, and he'll get his chances, and you know, Nathan's best is, we haven't seen his best yet, I believe, and I'm looking forward to that, eh?
Well, I agree with you completely, Rupe. I think the best is yet to come for young Nathan Haas. Now, you mentioned Mark Cavendish going to, the, you know, joining him with Dimension Data. Of course, that's a step down for him from World Tour to Pro Continental team. And, of course, FedEx Quickstep, they replaced Cavendish with a disgruntled Marcel Kittel from Giant. What your thoughts on that whole saga and transition?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I guess it shows that you know, I guess for Giant, I mean, I guess it shows that they're all, I mean, gee, it's a hard one, isn't it? I mean, it's you know, I guess we'll see soon enough with the results, really. You know, I find it a little bit odd just with the musical chairs, people moving from one team to the next and just filling someone else's void, and you know, because at the end of the day, they should be just the same riders, shouldn't they? But I think Cavendish's move to the South African team is bigger news than, say, Kittel's move, because I guess FedEx Quickstep obviously need to fill that void having a sprinter. But there's a lot of pressure, obviously, on FedEx Quickstep to have a sprinter, and it's a team which does have a lot of riders built to support a sprinter. So, you know,
there's a bit of pressure for Marcel Kittel to perform now after a really lackluster and non-existent 2015 season.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, yeah. it's going to be a fast and furious start to the year next year. So, now listen, Aaron, we're going to
I'm already chomping at the bit, Rube. Let's get the 2015 over with now. Let's go to 2016.
No, not yet. I've got to have my holidays yet. I've got November leave coming up. I want to enjoy those. But before we're going to let you go, Aaron, we're going to take a little break again, but we're going to keep you on the line because we're going to have a change of pace. Okay, we're going to go to I was about to say NRL, National Rugby League. I'm getting mixed up because this weekend we've got Rugby World Cup, NRL, AFL finals. But we're going to talk about American football, NFL, after the break. So just stay there, Aaron, and you're listening to What a Ride. Rupert Guinness is myself and Aaron S. Lee. We'll just take a break. I'm going to talk about the NFL and Jared Hayne.
We are young. Heart to heart, we stand. No promises, no demands. Love is a battlefield.
We are strong. No one can tell us where we're wrong. Sunshine holds for so long. Both of us knowing love is a
to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness, and direct on the line from the US of A is Aaron S. Lee. Now, we've been talking Ironman, Aaron. We've been talking cycling. I'm getting exhausted, but I hope I'm hanging in with the pace here. It's a really busy, busy time of sport, not just in Australia, but around the world. As I said before the break, you know, we've in Australia, we've got the AFL, NRL Grand Finals. We've got the Rugby World Cup over in England, where the Wallabies beat England to qualify for the quarterfinals this morning, Australian time. So it's all happening there. But in the US of A, as we've said, a lot's happening there as well. We've had the World Cycling Championships. We've got the Ironman coming up. And, of course, we've got Hayne mania continuing. The story, the remarkable story of former rugby league player Jared Hayne, who's contracted by the San Francisco 49ers, who have had three games now into their season. They've won one, lost two. But Jared Hayne in his last game against the Cardinals, he again created a lot of attention with a 37-yard run, I understand. But he's got a big test coming up, Aaron, on Monday Australian time. They're playing the Green Bay Packers. And I think, as you told me before the break, he's going to come up, he could come up against Aaron Rodgers, the NFL's most valued player, I understand.
Well, his team will for sure, Rube. You're right. The San Francisco 49ers are currently 1-2, one win, two losses in the overall standings, whereas the Green Bay Packers are 3-0. Of course, Aaron Rodgers, the top-rated quarterback in the NFL right now. So Jared won't, obviously playing offense, go directly head up against Aaron, but his team will for sure. Obviously, you'd have to give the nod to the Green Bay Packers, but it's going to be a big game, and all eyes in the U.S. will be watching it. So it's a great time for Jared to continue showcasing what a phenomenal talent he is. And look, he's what a specimen. You know, 27 years old, he's 6'2", 220 pounds. He's cutting his baby teeth, Ruth. He's just cutting his baby teeth in the NFL, and he's already showing a lot of promise. So I tell you, I'm excited about watching, and not only tomorrow, but I'm excited about seeing what this kid can do.
Yeah,
in the long term.
Yeah, because I think now I think somebody was saying today, one of the Sunday papers here in Australia, they're saying now's the time for. Actually, do you know who it was? It was Tim Cahill, footballer. Soccer player. You know, he's playing over in China, but he keeps in regular contact with Jared Hayne. They send text messages each day, you know, before games and everything. And Tim Cahill was saying, I think now's the time for that Jared should be able to sort of just quietly go about his business and enjoy his career ahead of him. You know, like obviously there's a lot of attention, so you just can't stop the attention like that. But I think he's just hoping that Jared can have a bit of peace and quiet and starts to work, you know, from a long term on his career. But I tell you what, the Sydney Morning Herald, we had a reporter there, Michael Chamis, who went and saw Jared Hayne earlier this year, and he was there for the last month up until he got up until his first game, and he's been living and breathing this story, and we've had a couple of chats with him for this episode. Now, Aaron, in this first episode, one of the things I did speak to him about before we listened to it, I asked him about what was it like being an Aussie reporter who covers NRL, rugby league, suddenly been finding himself in the maelstrom of NFL reporting. I don't know how you think that might have been for him. Do you have any views about how that might have been different for an Aussie going over to the US?
I don't think it would have been any more difficult than it is for an Aussie reporter at the Tour de France amongst the foreign press there. I think obviously there's at sometimes there could be a little bit of a hierarchy but you know I've seen you, Rube. You use your elbows and you get in there and get your questions asked. I mean, and you've never been shy about pushing another reporter away, especially the TV guys, and seen that firsthand. So I don't think it would have been that big a deal, and I think as well he would probably have a lot of insights that the other reporters, the U.S. reporters, would follow his lead a bit in dealing with Jared Hayne.
Yeah. Well, I know Michael became a little bit of a star over there. We heard he was interviewed by radio stations, and he was asked about Vegemite. He was asked about Men at Work. He was asked about what they kept on calling it rugby or rugby union, and when it's rugby league, but. He became a little bit of identity himself. And so I thought, you know, this show, Aaron, we love to talk to identities, don't we? Yeah. So I thought I'll go straight to the man. Yeah, we can't bring you Jared Hayne himself, but we can speak to the man who spoke to Jared Hayne. And here he is, Michael Chamis. Let's have a look. Let's have a listen to see what he had to say about what it was like reporting and following the story. Well, welcome back to What a Ride. I'm Rupert Guinness, and sitting with me is another one of my erstwhile colleagues at the Sydney Morning Herald, Michael Chamis, who has just got back from almost a month of chasing the Hayne plane, Jared Hayne, in his pursuit of a career in the NFL. Mr. Chamis, welcome back, mate, and just for this brief response, you're back in Australia. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, it's good to be back in Canada. Unbelievable experience, being able to cover that kind of series of years of this story in a decade. definitely.
Tell me, you know, like, I know you've been following the story before, but you've been over there before and you've interviewed Gareth. If you notice any changes since Gareth came, the person to when you interviewed him the last time when you were over there?
Yeah, I did. I think it was a lot more, relaxed than I saw him in April. I think the magnitude of what he accomplished in the roster, I think that was still fresh. His goals probably weren't as high as they were when I saw him. So, first time around, he was very relaxed, having to talk about his journey. He didn't want to give too much away, didn't want to show too much emotion. It was as if he had his guard up and all the media attention. So, that started to show the way he established my attention, dealing with the media. I think, it all got a little bit too much for him. I think if he had his way, the service would die down a lot earlier.
Now, you churned out so many stories, so much copy, you know, every day doing it. I mean, I remember that one of those last stories you did file before you came back was what you were just alluding to, where he sort of said he had enough, and I could read within the tone of the story that you could feel he was at the tipping point. Was that an awkward moment for you guys? Because, I mean, you'd been there every day, he would have got used to seeing you, but did you... You want to get all the story, but at the same time, I guess you don't want to sort of break this relationship that you've developed.
Yeah, it felt like we were stalking him for a while. Every time we saw him, he'd look at us, we'd look at him, it was like, not again sort of thing. We'd run out of questions to ask him, but to his credit, we developed a relationship with him from Australia, back in Australia, so he always took the time to answer a few questions on the side after his interview. But it did have that feeling where we'd overstayed our welcome a little bit, and he was just wanting to get back to trying to impress. Because you've got to remember that when you walk into the locker room and the media are all around Jared, there's probably guys in that room who'll be looking at him like, why he hasn't deserved his attention after 4 weeks in the sport. So I think one of the things he was conscious of was not trying to big note himself and definitely earn respect for players who basically felt they had to earn his stripes before he could get the right to demand certain stages if he had been. So,
How was the guys and also the other coaches that were there as well? How did they respond to you guys? Were they getting at all testy or anything? Or were they sort of curious about who the Australian men are and what they're like?
I think at the start they were curious, and the head coach, I'm sure, was probably laughing and enjoying the attention, but by the end you felt as though when you asked the step in the mark a little bit, they felt like you felt bad for Joe, you didn't want to hijack his show. I felt personally probably didn't know what well I'm getting. Players responded well, Reggie Bush, we had to talk about him. One of the other guys actually said to me, I came up to the guy, Alex Boone, he said, I wonder if he thinks Hosbys is mic'd up on the sideline when he puts his shoulder charge on. So I went up to him. He turned around to me and said, when he heard my accent, he's like, if you ask me a Jared Hayne question, I swear. And I just turned around and said, mate, I just want to talk to you about beer. And he's happy to talk about beer. But I think they all can understand and sort of have appreciation of how big this story is in Australia. So, but there were the occasional comments when you were interviewing him, Jared, the Hayne plane, they were screaming out in the middle of the interview. So, I think he got a little bit tired of that.
Now, obviously, you saw him, his transformation into now being a rostered player. He's had a couple of games now. But when you compare seeing that transformation to other athletes and other sports you've covered, you cover a lot of tennis, obviously rugby league and other sports. You know, is there sort of a comparison you can make to what you've seen and what's it been like to write about?
I'm not an NFL expert, so it was a bit hard for me. But obviously, I've spent a lot of time with Jared, so my focus has been more personal rather than his development as an NFL player. But I got to understand the game and I got an appreciation for how much he actually was working because he played with him, he had to pick up and very few that he did in such a short time. Even the American journalists were amazing. So I also understood
where he's at because of the response from the US media, and they were all amazed at what he's been able to do. Not just from a playbook point of view, but just finding space. They're not aware of rugby league or rugby union players for that matter, of how they, you know, how natural they are in space. So to see him do what he did, quite
what about the infrastructure around an NFL side, 49ers, for example? I mean, you know, we've seen, you know, football here in Australia, whether it's league or union or A-League and AFL, and the stadium is basically a stadium and a locker room, and I guess a lot of it's your IP with your coaches and sports scientists and medical backup staff. Is everything on a much bigger scale there at the 49ers?
Yeah, not just the 49ers, I think the whole NFL. I walked into the NFL offices in New York and on display, the 50-odd 49 premiers, the Super Bowl ring, sorry, there and the coaches there. And when I walked to Denver, the training facility was nothing you've seen here in Australia before. Just two fields, there was an indoor field. It was just out of this world. I think with the 49ers as well, inside the locker room and the way they operate, it's a totally different level to what we're used to back home. I remember going up to the 49ers offices and organised an interview with Jed York, the CEO, the son of the billionaire owner, and to get into the office, there was fingerprint scanning. So, you don't get that at Belmore, definitely.
They may need it. You never know these days. What about the NFL supporter? How would you say, you know, compare an NRL supporter to an NFL supporter? Is there a different sort of breed, or are they intrinsically the same sort of lunatic fringe society? No, I don't mean that. I mean, every code needs its fans, but I mean, what are they like?
I think it's different. Especially with rugby league, with Jared, obviously, with rugby league in Sydney, there's not a team, so within a city, you feel that rivalry. Well, you don't feel that over there. It's the same. Now, I guess they have the Oakland Raiders, but the San Francisco 49ers, and it's basically one team. Similar fans, but I just think they're all, it's all about, you know, talking about
performance. Now, we were wondering back here when you were every day churning through your copy, we're thinking, gee, maybe there's going to be a full-time round for you here. And you may, and I know you like tennis as well, you may be sort of trying to lay the bed ground for a US sports correspondence gig. What would that be like? What was it like covering sport in America, and how is it different to here in Australia?
Oh, it is. It's totally different. I think it was to get the opportunity to go to New York and the US Open. That was quite an incredible experience, I guess, seeing the way they operate over there, and come to the Australian Open in Wimbledon, and just like the culture of sport over there, it's all about the show. And I felt that with the US Open compared to some of the other Opens, the other Grand Slam, sorry. And covering the NFL, well, it's the media is treated like royalty. It's not like it is here, because over there, you walk in into the locker room, the access is it's completely different. It's open to everyone, and it's sort of, you get the feel like you're welcome there rather than you're a hindrance, which you sort of get that in the NRL. And I think we could learn a lot from the way they operate their media, because so the players seeing someone in the locker room, media in the locker room, to them it's normal. Here it's frowned upon if you see someone in the locker room. I think South Sydney trial did it earlier in the year. I don't think half the players were happy having media in the locker room. So they're leading the way in that, and I guess we've got a lot to learn.
Now, obviously, you did say you're covering the US Open. I mean, besides seeing, Jared and the 49ers be so welcoming and calm and, you know, in light of the normality of the story, but over at the US Open, you know, the Aussie tennis players, another extreme of, character and personality, albeit they're pretty young kids growing up. I mean, what was it like going from one extreme, having to cover someone who's so calm as Jared and accommodating, and then get into the tennis there, and you've got some fireworks? What's going to happen?
It was interesting. I think it probably would have escalated if Kyrgios hadn't been knocked out in the first round. But look, personally, I get along with Nick, and I think that while he has a lot to learn about the way he handles himself on court, there are some things to like about the way he plays. I don't think he should change the way he the enthusiasm he plays the sport, the passion, he's probably is on the right track, but I just think he's got to learn when to use it and when to sort of rein in a little bit. So Bernard Tomic as well, I don't think you'll meet a nicer guy at the press conference. He'll come in, he'll say hello to every single person there, and when he walks out he'll thank everyone, which you don't see very often on the tennis round. So I think they're a little bit misunderstood, but they do have a lot to learn, which they both admit it. Yeah, the vast difference to Jared Hayne though in terms of media training. Jared is a lot more switched on, and in the end he was the one saying, I know you're trying to get stories out of me and I'm going to give you nothing. So he's had 9 years of experience, so yeah, Nick and Bernie have a lot to learn.
Awesome. You certainly managed to get the stories, whatever, you know, roadblocks they try to put in front of you or not. I'm Rupert Guinness. We're talking with Michael Chamas from the Sydney Morning Herald, who's just back from the US, and you're listening to What a Ride. We'll just take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Cause when you're near me, your love is all I need.
line direct from the USA is, I was about to say Jared Hayne, but no, Aaron S. Lee. And but well,
I get confused a lot. People do stop me on the streets of New Orleans, and so you, Jared Hayne, said, "No, mate, I'm not." And they actually, I have to do a little bit of convincing, but you know, 6'2", 220 pounds, and good looking, 27-year-old. You can see where people would get confused by that, Rick.
Yeah, you're not wearing number 38, are you? Or have you had that tattooed or something?
But now, I got to tell you, I think a lot of people right now are wearing number 38 because he's making quite an impression on the U.S. fan base. And from what I've read in the Sydney Morning Herald, among some of the female fans, so to speak.
Well, I think that story is still yet to be told. The full, well, you know, how that's, well, what's going to happen with his private life, I don't know. But, you know, Jared, to be fair to Jared, he is very spiritual, religious guy, and he's committed to his religion, and he's committed to, I guess, what's now his other religion, which is football, NFL. And Michael Chambers's remarks, I thought, were kind of really interesting there. You know, that was an interesting insight. But, you know, the other part, big element of the story is, you know, there was suddenly a lot of reactions from managers, or Jared Hayne's manager in the US, but also other managers and experts saying, you know, we should start tapping into rugby league in Australia, and also at the Rugby World Cup, some of these agents have gone over there to try and talent scout for the next Jared Hayne. I mean, is that too simplistic, do you think, Aaron, or do you think it's something which there could be a flood of... Or maybe not a flood, maybe a constant trickle of supply of players.
Well, listen, I think it's a tall task. But obviously Jared is proving that it can be done. And when I say it's a tall task, it's definitely not for the lack of talent that's in Australia or countries like New Zealand. Obviously, there's a wealth of phenomenal talent, but to play at the level of the NFL without any prior American gridiron football experience, it is at that level, it's tough, as it would be for some of the best American football players to all of a sudden take up rugby. It'd be tough for them as well. So I think that's one thing that we have to keep in mind, but definitely the talent does exist.
Yeah, because I think the other thing too, that it's in the hiatus of the story, the success story that it has become, and I'm sure there's someone's going to be writing a script for a movie for it one day, but I think it's easy to forget the how much Jared, you know, had to have that want and desire, and there would have been a lot of low times as well when he was just, you know, like he said, in a car, not knowing where he's going to go to today to try and find a place to train and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's not just about putting your hand up and hoping a contract will come to you. You've got to really be willing to make a sacrifice, which he ostensibly did by turning his back on a $2 million NRL contract. So, I mean, it's not just about turning the switch and putting on pads and a helmet and then turning up at Levi Stadium.
No, you're exactly right. I would, as a journalist, I would never be faced with that type of situation or decision. So I can't even put myself in his shoes of what actually he turned down and to pursue his own dream of playing in the NFL. But good on you, mate.
Yeah. Well, look, Michael Chambers, we spoke to, who we listened to before, I sort of asked him about this sort of, you know, question as well, because Michael follows NRL as well, and he's got a pretty good feel as to the environment from both sides of the fence there, NRL and now NFL. Let's have a listen to see what Michael had to say about that, and a little bit more about the Jared Hayne story and what it was like for him to follow it.
Welcome back to What a Ride. I'm Rupert Guinness, your host for this episode. And with me is Michael Chambers from the Sydney Morning Herald, who's just come back from almost a month in the US, where he was following the story of Jared Hayne, the Hayne plane, and his pursuit of a career in the NFL and also covering the US Open. Michael, thanks for being on the show again, and still on the show, I should say. You didn't go anywhere in that little break we had. Tell me, like, obviously now Jared's up and running, but I guess he's probably quite happy now to be peace and calm, where he can just focus on the natural team environment without, as you said before, just being Australian service following every step he makes.
Yeah.
I guess down to identify the next Jarrod Haynes, break under the lead like he has. What's your take on that? You know Jarrod Haynes is obviously over the floor, but there's other people that are just like everyone's got to say on deal with the NRL, so really what actually 100% faith in what they're doing. Are there a number of aspects that you wouldn't do? I don't think stories are still up online on sfx.com.au, so anyone who wants to who missed the story during his Michael's trip, still there to be read. Great yarn. Congratulations on that great trip.
To myself, Rupert Guinness, with still on the line, racking up a massive telephone bill, I'm sure, is Aaron S. Lee. Aaron, look, it's been great having you back on the show for longer than a quick call or whatever, mate. You've got to get back to Australia soon. We need to sort of get this going together. I was about to say cheek to cheek, but how about glass to glass anyway? Hey, before, I know you're not back for a few weeks yet, but I know you're taking a route back to Australia through Taiwan.
I am indeed, Rupe. And first, a big shout out to Telstra for an amazing international travel package plan that allows me to call you at a base break. So a big shout out to Telstra, and feel free, Telstra, to sponsor the show. We'd love to have you on one ride. I am going to Taiwan. I'll be going to Taiwan for the King of the Mountain Challenge, third year in a row that I'll be going to cover this event. It's a great way to kind of wrap up the season, Rupe. It's very casual. It's a one-day sportive. It's not UCI sanctioned. However, what I do understand is that UCI have been invited, will attend this year, to potentially the Taiwan Cycling Federation and the Taiwan Tourism Bureau have aspirations that this will become a UCI event within the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
So it is an amazing event. It's considered probably the hardest one-day bike ride, bike race in the world. There's $1 million Taiwanese dollars on the line, and I think that's probably about, I don't know, about $5 or $6 Aussie. But I say that in jest, but no, it's actually quite a handsome sum. It's about $32,000, I believe, last time I did the calculation. So there's a good prize money, and it's basically a 100-kilometer bike race, and they go from zero elevation to 3,275 meters atop Mount Wuling, and it's basically the tallest mountain accessible by road in Taiwan. It wasn't until that I went to Taiwan a few years back that I realized that Taiwan has over 200 mountains that exceed 3,000 meters in elevation.
Wow.
So it's a quite mountainous area, and they climb through they obviously ride the first 40K through Taroko Gorge, which is straight out of Jurassic Park, and every bend and turn, you just expect the Tyrannosaurus Rex to come down and grab you by the scruff of your neck. But and then you start the climb about 40K in, and then it just gets steeper and steeper. You ride through the picturesque sea of clouds, they say, at about 2,000 meters. And then in the final 10 kilometers, there are gradient spikes of over 29%.
My God, I nearly fell off my chair then listening to that.
Absolutely. And then speaking of Simon Clark, he wrote it. He raced the Taiwan King of the Mountain Challenge a couple of years back. Last year, Tiffany Cromwell raced it. I believe it was her second year, right? I'm not sure if Tiffany.
Yeah, because I remember she did the year before, but she took a camera, didn't she? She started, you know, taking pictures.
She did. Yeah, and this last year, she took it a little bit more seriously. She actually got caught up in a bike race, excuse me, a crash. But she, in typical Tiff Cromwell fashion, her and a fellow Aussie, Joanne Hogan,
yep.
They battled it out. And of course, I'm not mistaken, I think Joe Hogan, she finished in the top five, and Tiff finished in the top 10. It what's also unique about this race, Rube, is that the elite men and women and the age group men and women all race at the same time.
Wow.
It's quite interesting. But it's a great one-day event, and obviously we get to go there for a few days and explore and enjoy Taiwan. It's an amazing country. What I'm disappointed in, though, is I was originally supposed to go to Langkawi just right prior to Taiwan for a five-day mountain bike stage race, and some funding fell through by the Cycling Federation and the Tourism Bureau, and the race has been canceled in the final 2 weeks. So that's a real shame, and hopefully they get that bike race up and going. Always love going to Langkawi for any race.
Yeah. Like, I've never been to Langkawi, you know, for the race yet. And there's also another new tour on this year on the calendar, which is soon to start, which is the tour of Abu Dhabi, which I had been hoping to go to myself, and I know you were as well. But I guess we'll have to see let that race sort of run its course and see, you know, what the response to it is. It's a busy calendar, isn't it, Aaron? It's just like the year is so chock full of races. It's hard to keep a tab of every single event.
It is. It really is. And, of course, right now, the Tour of China 1, Tour of China 2, there's so many races going on at the moment. And, of course, Richie Porte has still been racing as well. The guys are racing over in Europe. I think the season seems to be getting longer and longer. And, of course, for guys like you and I, when we think the season's over, then the domestic summer series starts in Australia for both cycling and triathlon. It just stays busy year-round. But I guess that's I guess that's good job security for us, though, huh?
Yep, that's you've got to keep smiling, got to be happy for that, and also just another race which will be unfolding, will have been raced by the time our listeners listen to this episode, is the Giro di Lombardia, Tour of Lombardy, the fifth of the five monuments, one-day classics. And it's a race which I've covered many times when I was living over there, and I loved it. It was a beautiful race, a very hilly race, obviously, but one of my concerns is with all the changing of the calendar and everything, that there's the Giro di Lombardia has lost a little bit of its the focus and attention that it really deserves, because it is a beautiful race and it is still a monument. We only have five monuments, and I just really think there should be a massive effort to try and regenerate the luster and importance of this race on the world calendar, as everyone else is looking everywhere else in the world. But it deserves to be up there of the level with Paris-Roubaix and Flanders and Milan-San Remo, of which it is. Officially, but I just think it needs that sort of little bit of spotlight back on it.
Well, absolutely. Well, one way to get that spotlight is to, by all means, mention it on What a Ride.
Yep.
Get the people out there tuning in for it, and I believe that's on Eurosport.
Yep, on Eurosport, and if we get, well, hopefully, by the time we're people listen to this, we've had an Aussie winner. Because I think Simon Gerrans is, well, he's down to race it, and let's an Aussie winner creates a lot of attention back here, doesn't it? So let's cross our fingers.
Absolutely.
Hey, Aaron, look, it's been a great show, mate. It's been great talking to you, and thanks so much for staying on the line. I know it's a long way, and it's the evening there, your time. You have to start getting out and kicking out in the town and New Orleans, and...
It's a busy night tonight. Going to go watch the. It is Saturday evening at 7 p.m. And then we're going to watch the Florida Gators play the 25th ranked Florida Gators play the, I think, number 3 ranked Ole Miss Rebels this evening. And then hopefully tomorrow, my New Orleans Saints will snap their winless start to the season, and hopefully put a win on the board. So against the dreaded and hated Dallas Cowboys. And of course, if my dad's listening to that, he'd probably ground me. Obviously, the Cowboys are his team. So no, it's going to be a big weekend.
Well, look, I've been up early. Like I told you, I've watched the Wallabies beat England in their third of their four pool games. But that means that the Wallabies will now be playing Wales in their last pool game at Twickenham next weekend. But both Wales and the Wallabies are through to the quarterfinal, through the pool of death. England are out in their first. It's the first home nation to miss out on the finals in a World Cup. So that's been big news. There's going to be massive fallout with jobs and everything on the English team. That's going to be dissected many times during the week. And then we get down to the crunch phase, the quarterfinals.
Well, you're right, and by the way, that's quite embarrassing for the England squad. But the Wallabies have better watch out, because the other team that beat England was Wales.
Exactly. Both will get into the quarterfinals though now. But hey, you don't want to start losing. You might as well keep winning. And it's a very important game for their trajectory into the quarterfinals as to which teams Wales and the Wallabies will play. So the result is very important. And another little interesting story while we're talking, Japan, they beat Samoa, so they've won two games in this year's World Cup. Japan was the team that gave the surprise of the tournament at the beginning when they beat South Africa, so Eddie Jones is coaching them, and they're still in with a chance of making the quarters. And also the NRL Grand Finals on this afternoon, so I'm about to go out for a run shortly, my friend Aaron S. Lee, and then settle back in for more footy this afternoon.
Oh, fantastic. Sounds like the life, mate. Sounds like the life. And always a pleasure, and it's always great talking to you, buddy.
Okay, likewise. You take care, my friend.
Hey, thank you. Have a great day, and what a ride.
What a ride.
Well, we've got to the end of another episode. We've had to sign off from Aaron in the US. As we know, he has to get to dinner. It's in the evening time there in the US. But we hope you've enjoyed this show. There's so much happening. It just seems like a week goes past so quickly, or a month goes past so quickly, however way you want to look at it. I'm really excited about what's going to happen in the Ironman. You know, the race is such a hard and demanding event, and what sets it apart from all the other Ironman races is not just the heat and the wind, albeit they're very important factors in the race which can make or break you. But a bit like the Tour de France in the world of cycling, it's the event. It's the biggest event on the calendar, and the pressure and expectation and the hopes that all come with it can, as I said, make or break your day. How you handle that pressure, whether you're a professional or an age grouper just trying to do your best, it's such a big day. Having had the privilege of having been there myself twice, for good and for bad, it is a great time. And hopefully I'll get back there one day, and before I reach the 76 age group bracket too. But in between, we're going to have all the, in the world of footy, I guess there's going to be all the dissecting of performances, whether you're an AFL fan, an NRL fan, or a rugby union fan. The big crunch games have happened this weekend. The Rugby World Cup, though, is just still building momentum. One more week of pool games, and then we get into the knockout phase. The Wallabies, as we've said, are in the knockout phase. Whatever happens on next week's game against Wales, because Wales and Australia have qualified now because of the points they've garnered over their first three games. The big shock news was England bowing out, the first home nation to ever not make the finals. Rest assured, there's going to be a lot said and written and debated over the next week about that. And in the world of cycling, we'll be able to look back on who did what in the Giro di Lombardia, the last and the fifth monument on the international cycling calendar, a one-day classic in Italy. It's one of the most beautiful races in the world. As I said before, it's a race that I'm concerned about because the cluttering of the race calendar at this moment, and with the Giro di Lombardia being the only monument that's held in autumn, in the European autumn, whereas the four other monuments are all held in the spring of Europe. So it sort of gets lost a little bit like that from the calendar, and when it's a cluttered calendar, the spotlight of attention tends to get diluted or spread across a number of other new events as well. And then apart from that, before we know it, we'll be heading into the summer sports here in Australia. There'll be swim, there'll be ride, there'll be run, bike races, there'll be triathlons, a lot of sailing too. Won't give too much away, but we will try and get a little bit of sailing in later in the year. With the weather getting much warmer here, and you know, a lot of people getting outdoors, doing whatever they want to do, it's a great time of year in Australia. And I know up in Europe and the US, as it gets darker by the day, rest assured, just keep your hope that spring's not too far away and your winter will not be too cold for you. Certainly the Christmas period be fast upon us, and you'll all get a chance to have some festive spirits then, I'm sure, whether you're in the sun or whether you're in the cold. As for me, this is Rupert Guinness signing off for another episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly have. It's been a great ride, another great ride, and what can I say, but what a ride, and stay safe, and don't forget, a meter matters. Thanks.
shake. I must have been